I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren.
And we are the Rants Macabre, covering all things horror.
With a new episode every Macabre Monday, we explore the genre with sharp focus and deep production.
We want you to love scary movies as much as we do, so we don't overshare plots or give spoilers. The Rants Macabre. Cutting,
cultured,
and curated.
When you hear the word slime, what do you think of? Ooze, goo, sludge. Somewhere between liquid and solid, it lives between states. Whatever you're imagining, you probably don't want it on you. When this earth was still lava flows and primordial soup, our single-celled ancestors thrived and evolved. That same environment would be poisonous to us now. Maybe there's something in our DNA, something harkening back to the origins of life that makes us suspicious of this mysterious substance. Maybe it's because slime is the least anthropomorphic or the farthest thing from human a creature could be. Maybe it's a reflection of our worst impulses manifested, our greed, our addictions once indulged, always insatiable.
Or maybe just killer goo is icky and we don't want it on us, so let's get started.
I'm for that.
Sensation, light and free now. To elevation, enough is never enough. Enough is never enough of the stuff.
The stuff, the taste that makes you hungry for more.
Starting out this killer slimed episode, which, like, I'm gonna be honest, I did not like most of these movies.
Most. Buckle in.
Most of them. I didn't, you know, and like Killer Cars that we just did was so much fun and I loved every single one, even Trucks that was so terrible.
Yeah.
And so like this week really, maybe I just can't put up with it this week. I don't know.
It's been a rough week at the office without me there.
And going back to school with all my students and stuff. I don't know. But we'll kick it off with, I guess, honestly, my probably most favorite of the group here.
Really?
1985's The Stuff, written and directed by Larry Cohen. He's a writer, TV guy from the 60s all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Written a lot of stuff. He also did Maniac Cop that we know him from, and It's Alive. He directed the It's Alive in 1974.
A quality starts to emerge, but there is the sort of curveball that he wrote the Abel Ferrara Body Snatchers from 1993, which I haven't seen since I was a kid, and it was on HBO, but I remember liking it. Abel Ferrara is a fine filmmaker,
right.
So I kind of expect that that's probably a decent movie.
I don't know. I don't remember.
So Larry Cohen's not all bad.
No.
I suspect it was... I'm not going to say he was on a lot of drugs, but he was probably on a lot of drugs in the making of this movie.
Well, I think you'd have to be. The stuff literally is some stuff, goo, from the ground.
Yeah, so... It starts pretty similarly to The Blob in terms of like a person finding something
and then
coming into contact with it. In this case, it's in a quarry. It is white goo coming out of the ground in a quarry. It's not even nature. We're like, mushroom, magic mushroom.
Right. Who eats goo on the ground?
No. Well, nobody. Evolution is essentially
except
like,
for this
weeded
man
those
does.
People out.
Yeah, this man does, and he like ruins all of humanity because he can't not eat white, liquidy, gooey substance that's on the ground.
And it goes from that moment with Night Watchman eating goo to an overnight sensation.
Yes.
It is in stores. It is hugely popular.
Yes.
There's been a major advertising push. One company has cornered the market. And that's kind of where our story like gets going, because this is a story about corporate espionage.
It is about corporate espionage. It's about the dangers of advertising, bad advertisers and things like that. Our star here being Mo, because...
You know, Mr.
Rutherford, Mo Rutherford, you know why they call me Mo?
No, why?
Because every time people give me money, I always want Mo.
He always wants Mo.
Mo.
That's Michael Moriarty, 6'4", big giant man.
Is he? Wow. That's the strongest characteristic about him. I mean, he's a scummy leading man, and that's just where we're starting. Where he's talking to corporate suits, and he's like, "You want the ingredient list? I'll get it for you." Like this proprietary goo. is really like.
And then he punches a guy in the face.
So tell me about the stuff.
Now look, you've been briefed on this problem.
Well, not completely. I don't understand why you didn't go to the Food and Drug Administration.
For one reason or another, right after it was approved, most of those involved resigned. They're either out of the country or on vacation.
Or they had been paid off. That is the American way, you know.
We've never had so much trouble getting information out of a company.
Oh, don't you worry about that. Every stone wall has a chink in it. I'll get inside there. I'll penetrate the company. I'll do some damage. But it's going to be expensive, believe me.
Hey, look. We don't want to know how you do it. Just do it.
Nothing makes sense. There's a meeting on what's happening.
What, did they call into question his credentials? Or, like, because all of his business happens in secret, he has a hard time, like, pushing a resume?
Right. But he's got this dumb southern accent. This dumb way of talking.
Mo Rutherford.
Yeah, so Mo Rutherford. There's a lot going on. So that starts the corporate espionage, let's say, part of it. I'm not going to lie. I absolutely hated everything that was happening.
Until?
Until Chocolate Chip Charlie shows up. Until Chocolate Chip Charlie shows up. But that's jumping ahead. That's jumping ahead.
Okay. We won't jump that far ahead. I guess are the sort of revelation that this is a mainstream product, you know, they don't tell us how much time. It's just sort of indicated when a young boy wakes up in the middle of the night bitten by mosquitoes. Just, I don't know. As far as character introductions, I kind of relate because mosquitoes
have
tormented.
Yeah, because you had that huge mosquito problem.
They almost ended my relationship with Rachel. Because I was accused of conspiring with them. In any case. Yeah, no, when he goes downstairs and it seems like all that's in the fridge is the stuff.
Yes.
Which, all right, it's marshmallow fluff. As far as like how it's demoed, it's marshmallow fluff.
But they eat it kind of like yogurt. So you can eat it as a meal replacement.
Yes, and they talk about how
it's good
got
on desserts
like,
too.
They don't say the word probiotics.
No, because there's it's 1985.
Yeah, there's not that much science in this movie.
Yeah.
But they do talk about it having, like, vitamins, and it's not as if they're always eating dessert.
Right, but it kind of is as if they're always eating dessert. I'm very confused on what the stuff actually probably tastes like.
Yeah, that's why I'm stuck on marshmallow fluff, because that's kind of, like, that's what it would have to taste like. But marshmallow fluff hasn't captured the market. It's as if, like, marshmallow fluff...
Because it's terrible for
and
you.
And heroin.
Yeah,
like, it's
probably
something that keeps them coming back.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I looked it up. Marshmallow fluff has essentially been a product since 1917. So even treating this like...
Marshmallow fluff is the shit.
Wow, this is incredible. Like, it's been around since 1917. 100 years.
Maybe the stuff doesn't give you cavities.
Maybe it takes away cavities. I think
amazing.
It definitely
That's amazing.
Gets you to stop caring about cavities.
It's true, yeah. I guess
I
there is
dentistry's
that.
Going downhill in the era of fluff. Or stuff.
So not only are we introduced to Mo here, we also then, yes, are introduced to this little kid with his bizarre family that's obsessed with the stuff, which is average America family is essentially what they're being. These kids played by real life brothers, because I thought to myself, how do they get two children with demon blue eyes like that? And it's because they are indeed related. There comes a point in time after you're introduced to some of these things that the stuff... It doesn't leave stains. We're left to know, like, oh, my God, this is a good-tasting food, and it doesn't stain my clothes when I drop it on myself. And I thought about you and all our lunches we eat together where you drop food on yourself.
Yeah, it's like 1 out of 5 times
That's
at tops.
Actually That's actually absolutely not true. It's literally 5 out of 5.
That's not true. Mindy's exaggerating. And Murphy agrees with me. I guess in a sort of, like, suburban rebellion, this little kid realizes that his family's obsessed. They want him to eat it. At the supermarket is where he has his, like, realization and tantrum.
Twice. And not just once, but twice in this film. So this supermarket sweep.
He destroys so many displays. Some people like their stuff refrigerated, like a nice Chablis.
Yeah,
and
I'm
he
confused
destroys
about this.
The refrigerator cases as well. Thousands of dollars in damage, in store damage.
Absolutely.
And then he runs out like 11 from Stranger Things. But
he's gonna kill you all. So it goes very strangely from one scene to the next. And after the supermarket sweep, we'll call it, and I would assume he won supermarket sweep by wrecking everything.
He trips over a box and I laughed really hard. Like, it was almost as if the prop guy put that there for him to trip over, but didn't tell him. He was just like, this is going to be real spontaneous. Watch him wipe out.
It's probably the only bit of good acting that's going on right
there. He does it, and the director tells him, use it, keep moving.
Then we are treated to an FDA scene where we talk about to the Food and Drug Administration.
I guess stuff was pushed through at an alarming rate, really concerning to the competitors because they had no time to study it or really question.
Much like our swine flu shots.
The FDA approves it, and then everybody summarily quits.
Right.
And so enter Danny Aiello as one of the FDA guys who left but kept notes on the stuff.
Yeah, and just, like, feels free to share these notes on the stuff with anyone who just stops by.
And he's got a kitchen full of stuff. I keep wanting to say fluff. He's got a kitchen full of stuff and a dog who's probably more committed to the stuff than he is.
That dog loves the stuff. This scene to me, though, really struck me as literally two people sitting on a couch ad-libbing an entire scene.
It was really bad.
Yeah. I go, I don't think there's a script. This is like a Christopher Guest movie, except not funny at all.
Yeah. Mo is, like, part of it seems like he's kind of coming from a good place in terms of, like, I don't know, the social safety of this product and wanting to get down to it. But at the end of the day, he's really just
trying to find the stuff.
Yeah, trying to get the ingredients and that. For that, he's going to Danny Aiello of the FDA.
Yes, of the FDA. But then, don't worry, because then comes Chocolate Chip Charlie.
You're Chocolate Chip Charlie.
Well, I sure as hell ain't the Kentucky Colonel. Get off of me.
I'm sorry. What are you doing down here in a town like this? Big executive like you.
I'm trying to find out something about the sons of bitches who stole my company out from under me and threw me out on my beautiful black ass. You work for them, huh?
I'm investigating them, same as you are.
Yeah, those shits. Somehow, man, they got to my asshole brother and my two idiot nephews and everybody else I trusted with stock. And they brainwashed them, man. Next thing I knew, they was in and I was out.
Yeah, okay, Charlie. Well, now, did you find anything out?
What you gonna find out, man, in a town that has just been dried up and blown away, man?
Thank God he shows up. And at that point in time, I think I even text you. That was exactly maybe when I text you. And I said,
This movie just got awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, I think I have Stockholm Syndrome. I have spent the first part hating this film. Suddenly now I think everything is hilarious. Also, I was taking some Vicodin, so I might have been, it might have kicked in, because then suddenly I thought everything was hilarious and awesome.
It kind of was, and I think whether it exhausts your sanity or actually does evolve into like a bizarre, sometimes slapstick world.
You start to like it. It becomes charming as hell.
Played by Garrett Morris from Saturday Night Live.
From everything.
And also later comes in Abe Vigoda.
Yes.
Who is in a commercial within the movie.
There are lots of commercials in this movie for the stuff.
The stuff. Abe Vigoda, famously of The Godfather, was taken from us last year at the tender age of 138. This movie is full of character actors. From top to bottom. And Garrett Morris is just the beginning of it. But so we mentioned that the supermarket meltdown adjacent, it hits the papers. There's no like legal repercussion, but some intrepid reporter got down to the nitty gritty of that story.
It is pretty great. I mean, he flips out. That kid goes wild.
Yeah. And that it's a national story that Mo sees in the paper and he's like, I've got an ally.
I need to meet this
kid. A 10-year-old boy. And he, like, in a different state.
Yeah, well, Mo doesn't care.
Goes to find
got stuff to do.
Jason, this is very convenient. It's starting to feel like a movie written by a 10-year-old.
Yeah, because we go, you know, suddenly, you know, at 26 minutes, I'm feeling the Stockholm Syndrome or the Vicodin, and I'm starting to like it.
Chocolate Chip Charlie is on his way to D.C. to talk to the
feds. Yes, so then at 30 minutes, and I made this note, at 30 minutes, I know it's wrong, but I would watch a weekly show with Chocolate Chip and Mo.
What are they doing, do you figure?
They would probably solve crimes, honestly. He would probably investigate things because Mo is an investigator, and Chocolate Chip Charlie, I don't know, he seems to
just be
loud.
Finds a reason to kung fu people.
Yeah, exactly. He's loud and he, like, punches, and that's that.
Do you think Garrett Morris, as an actor, reads the only role for a black person in this movie as Chocolate Chip Charlie, and he's like, guys, a little on the nose. You want to not name the only black character Chocolate Chip Charlie?
I think he did it for a paycheck. Because he talks later, they ask him, you know, about this movie, and he really talks about it like it was a job, and especially about the director. He says, if you don't have anything nice to say, you don't say anything.
So I think he
just said, I'm going to be Chocolate Chip Charlie. I know it's wrong, but I want my paycheck. Yeah. Then suddenly, after all this is happening, yeah, Mo's in New York. I don't know. Don't know how he got there. I'm not interested, I guess.
He's got a private jet. He's got a self... Well, maybe the corporation is actually picking up the bill of his travel expenses. I like that, like, in the old days, like, a private eye would say, like, it's $30 plus expenses. And they meant, like, gas money, cruising around LA solving crimes. Mo is taking a private chartered plane everywhere to, you know, pick up a kid in a different state and transfer him over state lines.
You know, as you do. As
on the
do.
Company dime.
Exactly. And at that point in time, we start hearing the people who like the stuff being called stuffies.
Stuffies. I like
and
that.
And I liked that
it's,
a lot.
It's a zombie for stuff. It's a stuffy.
I enjoy that.
So I have a question for you. As far as the stuff goes, its arrival, what it is, do you think the stuff is Mother Nature fighting back? Is it Mother Nature versus consumerism?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't think about the origin of the stuff.
I wondered, because it really
I assume it's like
comes out of the ground.
Pacific
like a
Rim, where it's
geyser.
Like always been there, and then it like comes out.
Oh, okay.
Or like it hasn't always been there.
It's
but
always
for
been
a really
there. It's like
time.
A zit. It's like the Earth's zit that
yes.
pops and it's gross.
Ooh,
light.
That's revolting. And then they're eating it.
Oh.
Speaking of gross shit, though, how about the scene where the kid is trying to pretend like he's eating the stuff? So he's replaced the stuff with shaving cream, and I'm like, you dumb shit. You're eating shaving cream. Like,
it saved his life. What's
but then
dumb
I looked
about
it up. You really shouldn't eat shaving cream. Don't eat shaving
Why?
Cream, everybody. It's really bad. It's
is it
made
really
with
poisonous?
Like the Listerine kind of alcohol. Like, don't.
Oh,
it's
okay.
like rubbing alcohol.
I
you don't
that,
drink
that
it.
Dry, okay. All right. Yeah. I agree. I will not eat any more shaving cream.
Yeah. I literally Googled, will that kill you? And it won't kill you. It's just not good for you.
Right,
but
like
I wasn't the only person to Google
drinking
it.
Drinking it'll make you sick. But,
yeah.
Okay. That's hilarious.
I wasn't the only one. Apparently other people
cream?
Do that.
I've got a 13-year-old can of Barbasol under my sink. Is it safe to eat?
No, don't do it. Which then, like, so I'm thinking these crazy thoughts. And then, I mean, it is like I was one with the movie at this point in time, because I'm thinking this, I'm Googling this as I'm watching it. And then Mo says, well, everyone has to eat shaving cream once in a while. And I was like, oh, my God. That's
See,
what I
I'm
was
not
thinking.
So weird. Yeah. No, so they get split up. I don't remember if it's when the kid is in the tanker, but Mo and his girlfriend, who is the former advertising head for the stuff.
Yes.
She invented.
Which he was tricking also her into following him, but she didn't seem to care after a while.
Right. It seemed like he was close enough to the straight and narrow where she was like, I'm going to hook on to this guy because he's righteous. But so they fall in love very quickly. Oh, so as a side note, they give her a lot of credit to the market. And she also feels a lot of guilt for the marketing of stuff
genius.
Because
the
it really,
stuff is genius, actually.
You don't feel like it's a real low bar for naming shit?
No.
It's like
America.
Naming your band The Band.
Yeah. The it's, band, the stuff. The stuff is a perfect name. That actually is marketing genius. If she was the one who developed that, then she's a genius.
It also, so this has a jingle. The 1958, The Blob that we're going to talk about, opens with its own song.
Yeah, Burt Bacharach.
And The Green Slime has the all-time best song,
best song
of all these movies.
Best song that ever existed.
These are very, something about slime really inspires, the directors want to go musical with it.
Stop. Taste that delivers.
Enough is never enough. Enough is never enough of the stuff.
So when Mo and his girlfriend get some alone time and need to crash at a motel, it's a motel.
Motel.
They get ambushed by the stuff coming out of Mo's pillow. Like, I don't know, as far as entry points, that's a weird place to start, but
yeah,
I'll grant you that. The stuff jumps from the pillow onto Mo's face
right.
in a very, you know, like a slapsticky moment.
Yes.
And his girlfriend's response is to set it on fire.
It's always good to set napalm appearing things on fire when they're on your face.
On your face. She essentially set his face on fire. The stuff doesn't respond well. The stuff like goes for the corners of the room. And this is where it gets really cool as far as the effects. The motel room was actually the same special effects room that they use in Nightmare on Elm Street, where Freddy drags the girl up on the ceiling. And it's a great spinning shot. And so with the trick photography, it looks like the stuff is like alive and active and riding the edges of the room. And like for those moments, the special effects in the movie are great.
I can't really say that. I don't think that the special effects are bad in this movie.
Yeah, there's some compositing stuff here and there later. As the movie goes on, it gets a little bad.
Just comparing it to like some of the others that we're going to talk about, like it's pretty freaking good. Okay, let's just take what we can get.
So under peril, the stuff like telepathically channels a stuffy, and we really could have used Kung Fu Charlie. Chocolate Chip Charlie, because this stuffy barges into the room, and as far as they know, like, this is just a fucking maniac who jumped in and wants to fight them.
Yeah, there's a lot of everyone seems to know something that maybe they probably shouldn't know going on.
Yeah, or the writers didn't think anything through, and they're just like, and then what if this happened?
Right.
And then Kung Fu.
And then what if Paul Sorvino shows up? And plays like the craziest, lecherous person on the planet.
So they go from Mo and company himself, him and the girlfriend, and they discover Jason was in one of the tankers because coincidence.
Good thing, too. God damn, he could have suffocated with the stuff.
Yeah. They find the quarry where the stuff was emerging from the ground and blow that up. Don't ask. It's not explained.
At which point, though, did you notice the girlfriend? She seems indignant, and she says, they don't process it or manufacture it at all? No, it's goddamn food. How much processing and manufacturing you want on your food? Of course they didn't.
Well, I'm just...
Why?
I'm...
She's indignant about it, though. But I think in the 80s, everything was processed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was the emerging diet culture. So, yeah, everything was kind of rendered and processed to be... I don't know, like creepy science food.
It's just kind of like, that leaf of lettuce is the same as the stuff. It's okay.
Yeah, it was a weird thing to get stuck on. She was
really mad.
Yeah, it's kind of like they forgot to write her part other than like set explosive here. And she was just like, give me something. And he's like, you're surprised by how it's so organic?
Yeah, and then Paul Sorvino is going to show up and treat you like shit and you're going to just take it.
It gets so weird after they explode the quarry when it becomes like a conspiracy plot where it seems like the majority of the country is on the stuff and the other percentage are sociopaths like Paul Sorvino and his private army.
Yes, yes. And it's such a bizarre, like, uncomfortable, like, I found myself thinking, who wrote this dialogue? Because it's so goddamn uncomfortable.
It's really peculiar.
Then I started to sober up by then. I don't know. Because then I didn't like it as much.
No, it gets really strange. It becomes like a rebels scenario, except again, private creepy militia army.
Yeah.
And they're going to take to the airwaves. But then Chocolate Chip Charlie shows back up.
And he has a following on the airwaves or something. I got confused.
Does he?
Yeah, listen to him. I was, like, confused. I got really confused when Paul Sorvino showed up, honestly.
And you got more confused as the Vicodin kicked in.
It's like where it's like, I don't like this. Oh, this is great and excellent. Then I started to sober up and was like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, no, but that's a good note to end on. The stuff is such a peculiar movie. When I relinquished control of my brain, I began to enjoy it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Even though the main character, like, if you just look up the breakdown, if you figure out what he's about, it's all pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. But there was something that became like everyone in this film, I think, is supposed to have an IQ of around 80. People with an IQ of 80, this is how they would go about their life with the stuff.
I think your earlier observation was right, that a lot of this was improvised. I think a lot of this was kind of like Abe Vigoda owes me a favor and is already shooting an Italian food commercial on this set. So I'm just going to put my cameras up there and
get the, like, where's the beef lady and make her say, where's the stuff?
Is that who she was?
I don't know if it's the same lady, but that's obviously what she's going for.
Okay.
How's the food, sweetheart? That's nice.
Where's the stuff?
So read your product labels, people.
Yeah.
The stuff could be in there. And technically it was natural. It was, I mean, when products say like all natural flavoring, They're not obligated to specify what.
Just like heroin.
It could be the stuff. In the process of looking over the subject of slime and horror movies, I did come upon The Green Slime from 1968.
That's an asteroid. Check it out, quick. Freeze it on the video. Have you got that course figured yet?
Here it is, sir.
A collision course with Earth.
And yes. I watched the trailer, and I was fucking psyched.
Me
the trailer
too, me too.
Is so exciting.
Dude,
and
the first 15 minutes are awesome.
It's own song. It's
song
it's
hot fire.
Sung, it, I was going to say, for some reason, funky and whatever other word.
Slimy.
I
slimy and funky.
It's slimy and funky. It's slunky, all right. I was so thrilled. And again, like the stuff, if I can turn off my brain to a certain extent, I actually really did enjoy how campy this was. And,
I went the opposite.
How it goes.
I was in love with it at the beginning.
At the beginning, and then I lost
it. And then I was like, that's enough. That's bring the song back out. You know why? Because that intro is so good. And the first, like, right before, and then you hear the song, and then there's, like, a catchy, like, phrase. It's
yeah.
just, it's great. So, like, that was kind of, you know, disappointing.
Directed by Kinji Fukasaku, who also directed Battle Royale, and he did the Japanese sequences in the classic war movie, Tora, Tora, Tora. His last movie was Battle Royale 2 in 2003, which he worked through terminal cancer
wow.
to make, and he died at the age of 72. This guy was
did you see that?
Making
I didn't
movies
see
forever.
That.
The sequel to Battle Royale,
yeah.
I haven't seen. No.
I haven't seen that either.
This was written by Tom Rowe, Charles Sinclair, and Bill Finger, the man who, together with Bob Kane, designed the character of Batman. And frankly, all the cool stuff that we associate with Batman, that was Bill Finger.
Right.
Like the cape and cowl, the great villains, all Bill Finger. Bob Kane gets the credit. It was really Bill Finger who sort of designed the visuals. In any case, I had no idea he was a screenwriter.
Yeah, I didn't really know how this needed three people to write it.
Especially considering how much it borrows from other movies, but we'll get into that.
Yeah.
The story is by Ivan Reiner. Here's a synopsis. So I've been finding that IMDb, up top, it sometimes gives you like the tagline or the very stripped-down synopsis, but at the bottom, they sort of cycle through when the public just randomly writes a synopsis of a movie.
Sure.
So historically, some of the stranger
synopses
that I've said on this podcast were probably just written by the general public, as is this one I'm about to read.
Excellent. I like it.
A giant asteroid is heading towards Earth, so some astronauts disembark from a nearby space station to blow it up.
That's about it.
There's more.
That's pretty much it, though.
The mission is successful, and they return to the station unknowingly, bringing back a gooey green substance that mutates into one-eyed tentacled monsters that feed off electricity. All right, that was kind of I ran out of wind there because run-on sentence. Soon, the station is crawling with them, and people are being zapped left and right.
It's true. And there's also a love triangle. Don't forget about the love triangle.
There
that's
is.
For some reason pushed onto us that made me so angry.
Vince, don't let anything start up again.
That's up to him, too.
Try to remember that once you were the best of friends.
All right, Lisa. I'll try to remember, all right?
And listen, darling. You don't have the slightest reason to be jealous of him. He doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
You sure?
Apparently, in the Japanese version, they cut it for time. They did not use the love angle.
They took the love triangle out. They took a lot of the arguing out between the two guys, which I think I would have liked that movie a lot better.
Yeah, there's
they
a lot of
like... They argue all the time.
There's a lot of like alpha throwing around his weight. And yeah,
they're like frenemies kind of a thing.
So The Green Slime was a co-production between Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Toei. MGM provided the funding and script, while Toei provided the film crew and location to shoot the film. The Toei company followed up Green Slime with 1975's Wolf Guy.
I like the sound of that.
Enraged Lycanthrope. Really was a different time. Also, they did a live-action Spider-Man TV show and movie also, not in the MCU continuity. Green Slime was shot in Japan with a predominantly Japanese crew and Caucasian actors. Aside from Horton, Jackal, and Paluzzi, the rest of the cast consisted of amateur and semi-professional Caucasian actors and even American GIs who were living in Japan at the time. Our main characters played by Robert Horton, who starred in a bunch of episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and Luciana Paluzzi.
Yeah, who was a Bond girl.
Yeah, she was Fiona Volpe in Thunderball.
In my notes, I wrote bootleg Anne Margaret. That's what she looked like to me, like a really bootleg Anne Margaret.
I was expecting to look and see that she was like an Italian model.
So we talked about the theme song. The general music, the general composition in this film was done by Charles Fox, who is a badass motherfucker. We can't That music is amazing.
He made
hot
the
fire.
Theme song.
No, he did the scoring there's little like bells and things that is actually really brilliant.
I didn't like them. To me why it's high art.
He actually studied composition in Paris with Nadia Boulanger. So anyone who is
Nadia Boulanger.
Yeah, Nadia Boulanger. And so I mean that is high art, modern, you know, 20th century music. Not only though did he study with Boulanger, but he also did the Love Boat theme.
Okay.
He did the song Ready to Take a Chance Again. That's a great song. Thank you. He also did the Roberta Flack Killing Me Softly. That was one of his. Yeah. He did the music for Barbarella, The Last American Hero, and 75 Bug.
I don't know that one.
Oh, you should.
Is that a
The movie you have to watch with your eyes closed. That's the tagline. Which I don't know why you want to close your eyes and have bugs all over you. I don't know.
Oh, it's about bugs?
Yeah.
The listener could probably guess the look Mindy just gave me. So 20 minutes into the movie, we finally get to see the green slime.
I made a note of that too, because I was annoyed by this. We go on this whole asteroid killing adventure, has nothing to do with slime for 20 minutes.
Yeah, they do it way more effectively than Bruce Willis or Ben Affleck in Armageddon.
20 minutes, it was done and over with.
Done and over with. They just have to worry about bringing back with them this pulsating, glowing green slime.
But then I got confused right after this happened. I made this note because I don't know. I guess I blinked a little too long for a second. And their conversation went thusly. Do you realize what you're asking? Yes, I realize what I'm asking. But I, as the viewer, did not realize what they were asking, and I was very confused.
Was that about the quarantine, you think?
No, it was about, like, if they blow up the asteroid, maybe the people might get killed or something.
They won't be able to escape the blast radius.
I'm still not 100% sure.
They spent a lot of time talking
sure.
about that.
Yeah, and I was like, what are we, why are we asking this question?
I love that our main guy, it really speaks to the era, but as cool people do, he sort of says goodbye with a thumbs up.
Yes.
It was very,
I think we should do that
like,
more.
Marlboro Man, like cigarette commercial thumbs up. And like, frankly, the thumbs up held as a cool movie device until Terminator 2. That was kind of the
I kind of want to bring it
last.
Back. Sometimes I like to give like the double guns.
Double guns?
Yeah.
Do you do that?
No, it's more like a thumbs up and a gun at the same time.
Okay, so it's like you're miming.
Yeah. Also, it keeps people from, because you know I don't like to be hugged. And so if
keep
someone,
a distance,
yeah, exactly. Stay away, peace out like that. And then you don't have to have that.
Peace
awkward.
Out, peacemakers.
Oh, I like that. So then after they save the Earth from this asteroid meteor thing, whatever the ship, there's a swinging space party. 1968 hosted the most swinging space parties.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're celebrating.
All right, so I'm a little stuck on the what constitutes space and space travel when they show us ships and the like. We get a lot of miniatures. We get, like, this is – so, like, even the original Star Trek has better space effects. And
this is 1968. Shouldn't it look better than this?
It should. And for that, I kind of had a note that, like, this was only a year before we landed on the moon.
Right.
So, like, all the lunar landing hoax conspiracy nut jobs, like, this is the level of special effects. Even if Stanley Kubrick was involved in this space hoax, in the lunar landing hoax, like, it's not comparable. Special effects were not there yet.
This was in 1968. I think the special effects should have been a little bit better.
They might have been behind the curve.
So anyway, swinging space party, and now we're introduced to our monster. The slime seems to make a monster.
It's like
it's a harbinger of the monster.
Ultimate size, like that is what it's always aiming to grow into. That's what it wants to be when it grows up.
Oh,
it wants to be a one-eyed.
Adorable.
Is it? It makes a fun noise.
Yeah, it's adorable. It's cute. I actually loved it. It reminded me though of a wacky waving inflatable arm flailing. Like Tube Man?
It did look like that, like outside of a used car lot where it's like...
And you know the guy in the suit is just like waving his arms around like Kermit the Frog. You know when Kermit runs away.
Yeah. Apparently when it's still growing, so it's not full size, it was a child in that suit. It was a small Japanese child in
waving
that
his arms
outfit.
Around like a maniac.
Yeah. Why not? But so I have a note. As far as like the glowing green ooze, I don't know. I've got slime on the brain, and I was thinking of Creepshow, the segment with Stephen King where he sort of grows into the moss monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking Creepshow 2, the raft segment is maybe one of the only Creepshow segments I actually find scary, and mm-hmm. I liked from even the time I was a child, but that was the one that scared the shit out of me. That's why I don't swim in lakes, because like gooey,
and you're also afraid
ominous
of sharks.
Shit. Not in lakes, I'm not. But, like, I don't know. The raft was a great segment. Do you have any memory of Creepshow 2 and the raft?
No, I don't. You know what? We watched Creepshow 1 and 2 maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And
for the first time?
Mind.
Yeah.
No, not for the first time, but rewatched it because I have, like,
okay.
A
but you still...
sad DVD I bought for, like, $5. But, yeah, no, out of my mind. Because you know why? Because I confuse it a lot of times with Trilogy of Terror. And I confuse it with some of the other, like...
Trilogy of Terror.
Theater Bizarre.
Arguably
things
better.
Like that.
Yeah. Speaking to the effects, the rocket ships, it did look reminiscent of the old puppet show, The Thunderbirds, as far as, like, this retrofuturism.
Yeah,
and
I can see that.
Even, like, old Japanese TV. I grew up on, I think it was Ultraman, which is, like, a Japanese hero... Godzilla setting kind of thing, where, like, he would get really big and then have to... save the smaller buildings and whatever monster of the week he was fighting. That's essentially Power Rangers. It was Power Rangers before Power Rangers.
Fine.
Ultraman. So the settings were very familiar. None of it really looks good. Some of the sci-fi like space station stuff looked good.
Yeah, it reminded me sort of C-Lab, like the cartoon version of this crazy space station, which makes me say. And I made a note of it. I don't think the science talk that they're using is real science talk.
There's a moment where they're looking at astronauts outside of the space station. So like the height of science. Man is in space alone. And then from out of nowhere, a telephone rings.
Yes.
And it is a fucking rotary telephone from 14.
Right.
And they're just like, there's someone on the line. It's like, no one's going to address that a telephone rang from the past.
There was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. It was, I don't know, whatever. I mean, it was fun. But so they finally come to confront some of the monsters, and they're shining flashlights at it. Fine. And then at one point in time, a man, he just throws the flashlight at the monster. Why are you doing that? Why'd you do that?
They explain that, and it's a little bit ripped off. They borrowed a good amount from The Thing from Another World, the Howard Hawks film, as far as like it being attracted to energy. I think at that time they had radioactive isotopes in that compound. In this case, any energy, it will siphon off and then it electrocutes people. So in addition to like wrapping its green creepy arms around people, it also electrocutes the shit out of them.
That seems to be like a byproduct. So essentially he's eating electricity and shitting out lightning
from
his arms.
The animal feeds on energy and discharges energy. That would explain its ability to electrocute Michaels. One cell, one microscopic speck left on a spacesuit, and it would absorb all the energy it could get.
Wait a minute. You mean this stuff reproduced itself inside the decontamination chamber? And then as we stepped up the current, it just grew?
Precisely. And these creatures could be developing on any part of the station where a drop of this substance can reach any form of energy.
I was surprised you liked the thing. I found the single eye amidst like a red. It looked
I
like
just thought he was cute.
Grimace from McDonald's.
He did look like Grimace.
And I don't know if you noticed, but there was a really creepy, like, it seemed to hang like a rack of testicles under each arm. Did you notice this? It looked like a shoe organizer you hang on the back of a door, but all balls.
No, I did. I apparently didn't do that.
Might have been looking too closely, but this is exactly the kind
testicles
of movie.
On the brain.
This is like what Mystery Science Theater would make fun of, and I looked it up. It's part of it.
Yes, it was.
They covered it in their pilot episode that didn't air, but I guess it's on some DVDs. This is exactly the movie, yeah, to make fun of and just call out, like, why, what, where, how, when,
right.
What's going on?
What is happening with this? I don't know. It was fun, but it didn't have the charm that, like, I felt like the stuff charmed me eventually. This never charmed me. It more just irritated me. I mean, multiple times, though, I made notes about how good the soundtrack was. So.
I found it a little off-putting because there are moments where... Well, a lot of the components are just like out of tune plucked strings.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't like that stuff.
Oh,
I mean, maybe it worked the best because it was probably all on purpose
and it was so like probably well thought out, and like I would have loved to have seen the score and like examined it. Oh my God.
Show up in a music shop. Do you have the orchestration to the film Green Slime? No. As far as sounds go, the sound that the aliens themselves make,
it's so cute.
I think it was supposed to also be unsettling because it sounds like the crying of the lambs. Like it sounds like tortured animals.
I thought it sounded cute.
It's a high-pitched, whiny kind of thing. They cannot sneak up on anybody because
no,
they lead
except
with the sound.
For at one point in time she goes, "Watch out." And then he like turns around and it gets snuck up on by it, but it's like they're making this noise the whole freaking time.
Should have heard him from a mile away. Yeah. So because it did sound like crying lambs, I thought of this. You wake up sometimes, don't you? You wake up in the dark and hear the screaming of the green slime monster.
Yes.
And you think if you save poor Dr. Benson, you could make it stop, don't you? You think if Lisa lives, you won't wake up in the dark ever again to that awful screaming of the slime monster.
I don't know. I don't know.
Thank you, Gladys. Thank you. It's so fucking silly.
I get so much joy. You know, I had to get into character. Yes, sir. She's a big girl.
So that was the Green Slime from 1968. Yeah,
yeah,
it felt closer to like 58, maybe.
The best thing about it, honestly, was that slunky song at the beginning.
Yeah, I think this is something like, I don't know. It's a little hard to come by, frankly. So you would need to get the DVD from Netflix.
Yes,
but
I was
like,
annoyed by the. You can't rent it on Amazon.
No, and I question the quality of what's available for sale, but. Yeah, Green Slime. So we're going from 68 to 58.
Yes.
With the original Steve McQueen's The Blob.
Beware of the blob. It creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door, all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch. Be careful of the blob.
Directed by Irvin Yeawith Jr., who we know from Dinosaurs. Oh my God, how much do you love Dinosaurs?
Wait. What?
The movie, not the TV show. That's probably what you think with the baby with the purple eyes. But a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and he fights with like a Brontosaurus. Dinosaurs. Oh, you got to check it out.
But it's not the like one that preceded King Kong, right? The like Land of the Lost or World of the Lost?
No, it's Dinosaurs with an exclamation point.
My mistake.
Yeah. Written by Theodore Simonson, Kate Phillips, and Irvine Milgate. And Kate Phillips is who gets credit for The Blob, actually saying The Blob. But
oh.
Because they had another plan, another film took that original name for it, and then they called it The Glob for a while, which
yeah,
sounds terrible.
As far as alternate titles go, yeah. It's only worse than The Stuff. Which winds up being The Taste when they rebrand The Taste, which isn't even a noun. It's a descriptor.
Yeah, that's stupid.
But back to The Blob.
Anyway, The Blob, 1958.
We're kind of going to race through this one because I think as far as The Blob movies, this is actually the less interesting one.
I do not like it.
No? Nothing
sorry.
About it?
Steve McQueen, not good. 28 years old when this is filmed.
Oh, I had 27, but yeah, he might as well have been 37.
Playing a teenager. It's bizarre. Sneaking out of his parents' house and for some reason asking them from permission as a late 20s person.
I was thinking if I came into this movie late and I saw Steve McQueen hanging out with the other, quote, teens of the movie, I would think, oh, is this a story about a narc, Steve McQueen, who's asking the kids where to find the marijuana?
He's Josie Grossi.
He's conspicuously older than what are supposed to be teenagers in this movie.
Yeah. He, and along with his girlfriend, Jane, Anita Carsat, who we know from, like, Days of Our Lives, old Days of Our Lives things. Music, The Blob, hit single by Burt Bacharach, right?
Hit single.
I don't know if it was really a hit at all. I just made that up. In my mind, it was a hit. In my heart. And I think in America's heart.
Very curiously, he did put it on the album Look of Love, the Burt Bacharach collection.
Well, you know, sometimes.
That's, I mean, Honey, I Love You. Here's Roses, Chocolates, and Burt Bacharach's album with the song The Blob on it. Maybe eat those chocolates over the course of a couple weeks and months.
Beware of the blob, it creeps.
It is through and through a drive-in movie. Like, it's got all the conspicuous moments of, like, hey, here is a convertible with two teenagers who are gonna make out, probably. But it's like, so it's very clearly a closed set until they pull away and have to sort of enter the world. But so one of the things that I did actually find interesting, except it's tonally bizarre, Steve McQueen has two monologues that start to feel like an allegory for veterans and the trauma they face.
Okay.
Like, heavy experiences that they can't really talk about, and in this case, no one's believing him.
Uh-huh.
And later on, there's even another reference. I don't know. I thought it was kind of wedged in there. Like, he didn't have a lot to do. Steve McQueen apparently made some pretty bad decisions even, I mean, entering into this movie, he was offered points on the back end. Like, he could defer some of his payment for points on the back end. And he was like, I've read this. This is a B movie at best. I'll take the money up front, please. And then it was a huge hit. Like, it made $40 million at the time.
It really was.
And he would have done a lot better if he had trusted
The Blob.
Steve McQueen,
life full of not so great decisions in just general.
No, I don't know that much about Steve McQueen outside of The Great Escape.
Steve McQueen ends up, you know, dying of mesothelioma from asbestos, which he thinks he got from a movie set.
Uh-oh.
And then he goes into Mexico to get this treatment, some special treatment by a guy who basically was just like taking his money and doing fuck all for him. And
that's it was like the Andy Kaufman.
That's when Steve McQueen dies down in Mexico on surgery for one of these tumors.
Oh, there was a lot of fire extinguisher firing. I wonder if
that's what I was thinking.
Used, like, asbestos in some of the like fogging up scenes.
I know. I was thinking, like, watching the film, I was like, maybe that's where that mesothelioma came from, because holy shit.
Uh-oh.
It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it.
This town is in danger.
How can it be stopped? Mob hysteria sweeps one city. Before long, the nation, and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of The Blob.
Starring Steve McQueen and a cast of exciting young people.
The actual Blob is still alive. The mixture of red dye and silicone has never dried out and is still kept in the original 5-gallon pail in which it was shipped to the production company in 1958.
That's pretty cool.
Union Carbide, which, chemical makers. It was put on display over the years as a part of the annual Blob Fest.
Yes, Phoenixville, Phoenix Town.
Phoenixville,
Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. Where they annually do the run from the movie theater outside.
Oh, that's where it took place. Okay, yes, the theater riot. I don't know, that's kind of fascinating that this movie prop is aged better than, like, I don't know, the original King Kong marionette sort of figure. That's just like a metallic skeleton these days, but the Blob survives.
It's cool. It's very cool. I mean, it's probably maybe where that mesothelioma came from. Who knows? I don't think anyone's still alive on that film.
No. I have a peculiar side note where, judging the firemen in the movie, firemen used to dress like Klansmen. It was an all-white costume with like flowing robes.
And it just seems silly and dumb because it's so much like, you're going to get sooty. You're a fireman.
Beware of the Blob.
So I'm more excited to talk about the remake of The Blob from 1988. This was the one that hit cable, and I guess it was cheap enough that they just ran it on a loop. It felt like on HBO you could catch it at most times of the day back in the late 80s, early 90s.
But you know what? I never saw it until just now.
And I'm guessing you didn't like it.
I did not. I mean... At first, I liked it. Again, this was one where I did like it at first, and then I said, that's enough. That's enough, Blob.
Directed by Chuck Russell, written by Chuck Russell and Frank Darabont.
Yeah.
So there were points in the movie where I felt it felt very Stephen King-esque as far as like this community of familiar characters. You know, you've got your priest, you've got your deputy, etc. And then it starts to make a little sense. Like, there isn't a bigger fan of Stephen King in this world than Frank Darabont.
Makes sense.
And, you know, they've even worked together so that his input to the script, you know, sort of fed its way into the tone, and that felt a little Stephen King-esque. It starts to make a lot more sense. Starring Shawnee Smith, who, lovely Shawnee Smith.
She is lovely, right?
And
speaking of Stephen King, she was in The Stand.
Yeah.
It's not a main character or anything, but there she was.
Yeah, and she's, you know, in the Saw movies, and she's kind of horror royalty. Mm-hmm. Kevin Dillon, who...
Who I called Matt Dillon in all my notes this whole time.
Oh, that's funny. Did you actually... You thought it was him?
No, I knew it was the other one, but I forgot which one was the not Matt Dillon.
It's the only one you forgot. Matt Dillon's the only one you remember.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, Kevin Dillon in this... Like, ever since I was a little kid, I didn't like Kevin Dillon. Like, there's
me
something
either.
About his face that
He's
I don't
the other
trust.
Dillon. You know.
And I don't know how close you were to the screen when you watched this, but his teeth are fucked up.
Really?
His teeth look like they're always facing north. Like, there is moss growing on
you
his grill.
You know what
grill.
I thought?
It's bad.
Like, I was, like, watching it, and I thought, you know what? He plays white trash really good. It was totally
He's
believable.
Not playing.
He has
He's
the
not
face
playing.
Of white trash.
Yeah, and the mullet to boot.
And it's such a shame because, you know, he's only 1 year younger than Matt Dillon.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I was like, this guy's nothing like Dally. This is ridiculous.
The movie also stars every character actor who ever lived. We've got Jeffrey DeMunn or Dale from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Bill Moseley makes an appearance. Paul McCrane. Erica Laniak, the model. She was a high school kid in the car. And even Del Close, the famous improv teacher out of Chicago, without whom there might not be a Saturday Night Live. The guy was that influential. He plays the priest to a really creepy degree. And to think that, like, the memory of him is one of, like, comedy and improvisate, like, the origins of modern improv, and his character is, like, the seediest, creepiest priest. It's perfect. Okay, so for those who don't know about The Blob, here's the synopsis. Again, remember, this is the public chiming in on IMDb. The remake of the 1958 horror sci-fi about a deadly blob from another planet which consumes everyone in its path. Teenagers try in vain to warn the townsfolk who refuse to take them seriously. Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, I suppose.
Jumping off, we have this football game. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. 1988, could high schoolers go after a football game and then go to drink at the local bar?
If the drinking age was still 18, yeah.
Is it? Was it in 1988?
Which makes it even weirder when they wouldn't serve the teens that Steve McQueen was with.
Yes, exactly. That's what made me confused. I was full of contradictions, and I didn't know what was happening.
Have movies led us astray?
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, maybe they're college kids. And then there's a scene with not Matt Dillon.
High school
Kevin
football.
Dillon.
Oh, okay.
Where they say he's still, like, underage. So I go, oh, no, they're high school. Nothing makes sense.
No, Shawnee Smith is a cheerleader and
very popular.
Hits it off with the, I don't think he was the quarterback, but whatever. He's one of the stars of the football team. Right. And you think, like, you know, he's a pretty decent guy. There's nothing creepy about their getting together. There's nothing particularly, like, ominous around it.
No.
But his interaction with the blob is like, starts us off great. Up to this point, we've already had the hobo who finds the blob meteor crater site and pokes it with a stick, as you do.
Actually,
both these blob movies, not friendly to the hobo. They're really dispatched. Like, the hobo's the first one to die in both movies.
He poked him with the stick.
He at least had the good sense, more than the security guard at the stuff quarry.
Yeah, he's not putting the blob in his mouth.
Hobo, no, I guess it attacked him a little too soon. He was, I mean,
it would give him time.
Pretty wild reaction if he was like being eaten, having his hand eaten away, and his solution is to put it in his mouth. I'm gonna chew it off.
I'm gonna see what this tastes like while it's eating my hand away.
If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a face, you could look it in the eye. If it had a body, you could shoot it. Now, man is no longer the supreme being on this planet.
So similar to the original, our high school kids bring the hobo guy to the ER. It wasn't a police station. It was the ER proper.
Yeah, it's an ER because in 1988, insurance was still the scam that it is today.
Yeah.
And they don't want to serve the old man.
Yeah, that
was
fucked up.
Even though his body's literally being eaten in half by some sort of acid.
Well, it's just on his hand so far.
At that time.
But
it does
grow pretty quickly. So once it essentially eats the homeless guy and it's growing at an exponential rate, it's also learned to climb walls and ceilings, and so when it drops down on our high school quarterback, like that was a good surprise as far as characters.
Great surprise.
I mean, I'm spoiling it here because the kill itself is awesome.
So cool. Listen, the thing that I have a problem with this movie is not at all those kills. The kills are excellent.
The practical effects are
they make
the movie.
Really,
I mean, it's why I love the movie.
So Paul now is underneath the big blob, and his girlfriend comes in to try and help him, and she ends up ripping his arm off, and it's so gross.
Yeah, and even just the, from what I can tell, it was like a subdermal layer of blobbery over his face, and that they were sort of sliding across his face as the pink outside sort of outside layer stays in place, so there's movement within the blob, and it's
right.
Like, you know, it's
eating
away at him.
We see the face exaggerated. Oh, it's great.
It was so cool. Yeah, the practical effects in this movie are the reason it holds up as well as it does.
Right after that scene, we are treated with a whole other kind of scene. At the beginning, I was like, okay, this guy's like kind of date rapey, fine. He's got a girl. It's Paul's friend, and he's got a girl in the back seat of his car, and he's making magic special soda that seems to put her to sleep. And so then
it looked
like
he was mixing NyQuil.
Yeah.
NyQuil and vodka.
What is that called? Syrup.
Syrup.
Yeah. I don't know how to say it.
In a styrofoam cup.
So he's like, oh, you need some more. You're not sleepy enough. And he goes to his trunk and there's a whole
kit.
Yeah. So then I thought, in 1988, things were different. It was a different time in 1988. Let's be serious.
This was different. This is the era where, like, Back to the Future, Biff Tannen is a straight-up rapist. And everybody's just like, now you stop raping, Biff. Not cool,
and so
Biff.
I'm thinking, like, okay, should I think... Because I think they meant this to be kind of a funny scene.
Yeah, that's how it plays.
And to me,
this is
like,
Erica Laniak.
She's asleep, and he's grabbing her.
He's going for the boobs. He's like... making jokes about how it's warm and she should open up her sweater, and so he helps her with that.
Yeah.
And what I do like is that the blob has already seeped its way into the car. But
thank
the
God.
Blob, and talk about dynamic, the blob can make tentacles if it so chooses.
If it chooses.
And it can grab you that way. And in this case, like it's sunk in her face and lashed out with its tentacles.
Excellent.
And that's pretty cool.
That was
and
great
it
effect.
Was, you know, it's what you had going, coming to you, really,
right.
Fella.
But I felt like, oh my God, it was such a sinister scene. But I think originally it was meant to be like funny, less sinister and
I think
more
we're
funny.
His character was kind of the comic relief earlier in the movie. There's a joke about condoms and
the
ribbed
priest.
And yeah. I don't know. I think they really that date rape was taken pretty lightly.
So now Shawnee Smith says, "Listen, Mom, this is fucked up, and this is all going on." And Mom says, "You know what you need to do? You need to take a sleeping pill." Moms in the 80s in horror movies loved to give their daughters sleeping pills.
It was all about Valium in the 80s.
They loved it.
Yeah. I remember in the movie Parenthood, a little kid notices that that their mom is giving someone a Valium. And, you know, as little kids do, ask mom, what's Valium? And she goes, it's like a nap for adults. Nice.
Excellent. Nice. Yay, drug dependency.
The burgeoning drug problem of this country and our
yeah, and our so use like they, I was like, that's crazy. Maybe that was just a thing people did in the 80s, just drug your daughters. So shenanigans happen. We end up in a closed down, what is it, a diner?
Yeah, it's the kitchen of a diner.
And the drain is clogged, and we know, as the viewer, we know that...
We can hear the music.
I know the blob's in there. But George, the cook, does not know, and he sticks his hand firstly down a drain, which is revolting. Don't ever stick your hand just down a drain, willy-nilly.
He kind of looked like the guy who would do
yeah,
that.
He kind of did. But there's a great effect because the blob comes out of the drain, grabs George and shoves him down a drain, and I loved it so much. I couldn't even deal with it.
Yeah, the blob is really good at getting big people into small spaces.
Yes. It was awesome. I was so pleased with how that turned out.
And again, as far as the dynamism of the blob, I assumed it did a lot of that with air pressure sort of forcing its way into the pipes and then causing so much of a vacuum that the guy was just pulled in entirely. Blob is dynamic.
Yeah, blob has
tentacles.
Stuff going for him.
Yeah, it can make solid surfaces to like pancake people on the street. Yeah. It can do that. Yeah, I like it. I think as far as villains go, I really like the blob.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know that. Yeah, you know, I sort of joke about it in the opening, but the idea that it doesn't seemingly have a thought process, it has enough of a nervous system that it can respond to stimuli, mm-hmm. i.e. the cold. But for the most part, it is just so fast and so aggressive that it doesn't need to think.
Yeah.
It's already thinking faster than any person is and, you know, fleeing for their life.
The blob does, though, not that it's trying to do it, but it just does annoying things like clog your drains or like clog up your air conditioning system, things like that. I'm like, the blob is the worst. He's just the worst.
Gets into all things.
And then later they blame him maybe sort of sideways for killing dinosaurs.
That's right. So what I did love the new angle that they've applied to the old model. And the 58, it's a meteor crash to Earth. In this case, it is also something that has crashed to Earth, but it was like a man-made germ sent into space. So in 88, it's a little post some of these space missions where, yeah, like, we're going to send shit up there and see how space affects them.
Right.
In this case, they're still doing that. It's like germ warfare. When it mutates in space and comes back down, the military's thinking, perfect. This is the killing machine we've been dreaming about all this time. It's finally here. And Kevin Dillon is, like, sneaky around a bush listening in. To, yeah, okay. So the guys in the hazmat suits, that's like a nightmare component from my childhood. This movie...
Hazmat suits?
Got in there. Guys with hazmat suits fighting against us, in this case with machine guns.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm also taken back to like Chud, the sort of hazmat armed...
Yeah, well,
group of soldier scientists.
Kevin Dillon. I'll never get it right, and I don't care. Kevin Dillon, at one point in time, he's... like distrustful at the beginning because the hazmat suit guys are trying to be their friend, and Kevin Dillon says, no, I don't think so, we shouldn't be friends. And I thought, yeah, that's right, never be friends with the guys in the hazmat suits.
Yeah,
never. And never.
I like that he's self-aware. He just short of diagnoses himself with oppositional defiance disorder.
Yes, he does.
But it turns out he was right all along. This is one of those cases where, like, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're wrong or
it's
whatever.
it's true
I want that organism alive. I think you pissed it off.
We mentioned some of the kills and some of the special effects. They're not always perfect, but I found more often than not, when they're bad, it's just a matter of like the compositing where mm-hmm. they've done like a special effects shoot and then they're, you know, overlapping it with visuals that are shot with our actors. And sometimes that doesn't look great. But otherwise, the kills in this movie are shocking.
Yes.
Like they are. There's
there's
a violent energy to the way some of these guys are like... snapped.
The air conditioning scene is an excellent scene.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
The even homeboy in the manhole, like half submerged, half out. Holy shit! When you see a hazmat suit fill with the goo, like I don't know. I love this movie. I really
do. Yeah, I mean, there's certain things that when I reflect back on it now, like talking to you, I'm like, yeah, I love that because the kills, you can't deny that those kills are amazing.
They make the movie.
You know, it's just, honestly, it's some of the dynamics between Kevin Dillon and the girl and the cop, the local cop that's so mean to Kevin Dillon for no reason, except for, I have a secret theory that that cop who's so mean to him is actually his dad.
His dad?
Yeah. So, I think there's a lot going on.
He gets treated, I mean, you know, consider the world where, like, ladies might love the bad boy, but everybody else fucking hates him.
It's true. It's true. It's just, you know, like, you think a bad boy, you think, like, Matt Dillon being Dally. Like, that's, like, the good bad, you know? So then you're just, but now you're stuck with Kevin Dillon being Brian.
Yeah, there were a couple devices that stood out as far as, like, very early in the movie, he's like, I wonder if I could jump that ravine.
Like, and then he chickens Matt, out.
But when the stress is on, when the pressure is on, he's going to try and jump that gulch. Very 80s. Almost like Simpsons 80s to that extent, where like Bart is jumping over the ravine. But in any case, I don't know. It's the horror components that work the best in the movie, and that's kind of why I'm so glad I like fell back in love with this movie. I hadn't seen it since I was a kid up till recently.
Yeah, I had never seen it. I mean, I'll just say it wasn't my favorite week. This was a rough week of watching films, so I'll be looking forward to what's next. Open the
door, you'll find a secret. So that'll close it out to this episode on Slimed. I guess honorable mentions go to Ghostbusters 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
Yeah.
The last honorable mention I couldn't think of was You Can't Do That on Television.
Oh, definitely.
So that'll close us out. We are on all the social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can drop us a line. Our email is therantsmacabre@gmail.com. We're on Patreon, where it's been a busy month for us on Patreon. This month, they got a holiday song where we retooled Baby It's Cold Outside for horror fans. We had a rant sequitur, the first of our rant sequitur episodes, where Mindy admitted to not knowing shit about Star Wars.
It wasn't like I was hiding it. It was like some deep, deep secret. Anyone who knows me knew I had never seen Star Wars.
I think it's the first time it came up on this show. So I kind of quizzed, and we did it up with production, so it's funny. That's ultimately the goal, is it's funny. That's us on Patreon, where you can join us for a whole separate catalog of shows, of music, of sketches. A lot is waiting for you on Patreon, and we could use the support.
So check out our website. We are therantsmacabre.com, where you can also stream our show. There's other stuff and things on there, and there's a donate button. What? Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, everything you can download podcasts on. We're on it.
Yeah.
If you're on iTunes and finding us through there, leave us some stars. I love stars. Give I eat them for review. Breakfast.
This is me, Darren, signing off.
This is Mindy. Thanks.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a